I was having a conversation at the Broadway Shopping Centre, of all places, with great Australian writer David Malouf, who is never prefaced with great gay Lebanese Australian writer David Malouf, who said to me that he couldn't stand the idea of identity politics, to which I said, me either. The reality of Australia is far more diverse than what we see on the screen or in Parliament.
I've been a terrorist. I've been a student that works in a convenience store.
It's not a tick box. If it's a priority, then make it a priority.
Hello and welcome to The Colour Cycle, a podcast that aims to disrupt cultural whitewashing and asks, do our arts and screens reflect the diversity of Australia? I'm Lena Nahluz from Diversity Arts Australia, or DARTS for short. We're an organisation that advocates for an arts and screen sector that looks like, feels like, the real Australia. I'd like to start by acknowledging the traditional custodians of this Australian land and to pay my respects to the elders past, present and emerging.
There might be some truth to the argument that this particular group, this demographic, are identifying with their labels. But if I go back to the earliest memories I have of those labels, they were imposed on me, right? So I won't name any names, but white members of the Western Sydney arts community were pushy for me to identify as a Lebanese Muslim young man from Western Sydney, because that is really good for white multiculturalism. And a lot of white Australian facilitators build their careers on those labels. And it doesn't necessarily correlate with empowerment for us. It correlates with us being participants in programs with white facilitators.
That was Michael Muhammad Ahmed, author and director of Sweatshop, a Western Sydney literacy movement, speaking at the Beyond Tick Boxes Symposium last year. If you want to hear more from Michael Muhammad, look out for the bonus episode of The Colour Cycle, where he speaks on a live panel with others on issues around cultural leadership. So what does it mean to be an artist from a culturally or linguistically diverse background? And, you know, how does the colour of your skin, the way that you speak English or the language you speak at home inform your creative work? And does it always have to? Are we always being forced to perform our identity and never being able to get those roles which would just see us as, you know, an Australian person? We're always that kind of ethnic sideshow or that other. Writer and TV and radio host Sunil Badami takes issue with always having to be classified as a South Asian writer. So I sat down with Sunil to dig a little deeper into this question about identity politics for creatives. And what is the Australian voice, and who does it belong to, and who gets to decide what the Australian voice is? And if it's not including a third of us because we or our parents were born overseas, or we're First Nations people, or we're women, or we have disabilities, then how can it purport to speak of us, much less for us?
I'm Sunil Badami. I'm a writer, an academic, and occasional broadcaster.
And, as it turns out, a quiz show hero.
Yeah, not a dermatologist.
We have this other joke: if you're an Arab woman, your parents want you to have married a doctor or a lawyer, and they won't be happy unless you've done that.
Lena, you know what my mother said to me the first time I ever got a story published in Mianjin, right? Did I ever tell you this story?
I don't think so.
So I got my first story published in Australia's most prestigious literary journal, right? And of course, the excitement of being published in Australia's oldest and most prestigious literary journal wasn't matched by the fee they actually paid me. And I said to my mother, oh, can you lend me $20 for the electricity, right? This is a long time ago, so you could pay an electricity bill with $20. And my mother looked at me as kindly as she could, and she said, you know, I really don't know why you persist in living this writer's cliche of drunkenness, dissolution and debauchery, only to become famous 100 years after you die. Why don't you break the cliche and start a family? I'm not getting any younger, you know.
Our mothers, they're pretty awesome.
They make for great material if they're my mother.
They really do. They really do. So what's the biggest obstacle to inclusion in terms of cultural diversity in the arts?
Well, I think privilege and prejudice. One is deliberate and one is unintentional. I mean, as Rebecca Solnit said recently, Obliviousness is the deficit of privilege. Wow, really? Was that racist? I had no idea.
You're very sensitive, aren't you?
Yes, I was born with too thin a skin, and apparently it's the wrong colour for radio.
Yes. But then on the other hand, when I was listening to your comment about people saying that it was good to see someone of your colour, inverted commas, on radio, like I'm sure...
No, they said they were really pleased to hear an ethnic face on the radio. Yeah. Do you know what? I had a girlfriend once and she said, don't worry, you're not really Indian. And she couldn't understand why I felt so offended by that, right? Of course I'm bloody Indian. I look Indian. My mother's Indian. I was brought up in an Indian household. I know Indian culture. All my family's in India. But the point is, it's not that I should abnegate my Indian identity to be more Australian. It's just that I'm Australian. That's the point.
That's what I'm saying. Like, how can they tell from the sound of your voice what background you're from?
Well, I presume when I say, Sunil. And you're listening to Sunil Badami on ABC Local Radio, ticking boxes until 3 p.m. today and possibly tomorrow.
But then on the other hand, hearing your name might inspire a lot of people who, you know, don't have Anglo-sounding names. So,
yeah, totally. I mean, you know, the thing is when I was growing up, you never saw, you know, the black people I saw on the TV when I was growing up, the guy from Love Thy Neighbour being called Sambo, the black and white minstrel show, which stayed on Australian TV on the ABC until 1983, even after it was axed in the UK, people on, you know, Mind Your Language performing all kinds of terrible stereotypes. These were the only non-white people I saw on the TV. So to see someone like Indira Naidu with authority, with warmth, with personality, I mean, it's not just people like me who responded to Indira Naidu. She became an instant icon, like Li Lin Chin, like Waleed Ali. And you know what? People do want to hear our stories and our faces on the radio and the TV. People do want to relate to us because guess what? There's a lot of people like us out on the street, whether it's Chatswood or where I'm from in Blacktown and Parramatta. The reality of Australia is far more diverse than what we see on the screen or in Parliament.
Yes, definitely. So, yes, not enough diversity on the screen or in Parliament. In terms of on the screen and in the performing arts, what's one strategy that would help affect change?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I actually wanted to ask a question, but I wanted to ask a question to the crowd. How many of you people here at this breakout session run a theatre or are on a funding board? How many of you here have commissioned an Indigenous or, you know, cowled production? How many of you here have taken on Indigenous or cowled producers or colleagues on your funding board or in your theatre production board? Well, that's what I'd like to know. It's all very well us sitting around and making a few jokes and talking and chatting and feeling good and going downstairs for some afternoon tea. It's very well catered here. These things always are. But how many of you are actually doing something? Because guess what? I can't. I'm still trying to get my foot in the door. You're the ones with the key.
So is that the strategy? What's the strategy from that?
Well, I think it goes back to your question about, you know, participation, my response of prejudice and privilege. I mean, people are all sitting around saying, oh, yeah, I wish the arts would do more. Yes, I would. Well, you are the arts. You do something. And eventually what will happen, in the same way that I hope my daughters, one of them will marry an African and the other one will marry someone from South America so we can go somewhere interesting on our holidays to visit the grandchildren, in the same way that they won't think about their ethnicity in a way that my grandparents and my parents did because they were always reminded of it, hopefully by taking on, actively encouraging, and not in a way that it's kind of like a white man's burden where, you know, we deign to tick these boxes, but that we actively seek new perspectives from talented people. I mean, we talked about this at the Diversity Arts Symposium Beyond Tick Boxes at the Casula Powerhouse earlier this year. And even the theme of this particular APACA conference about being outside in. Artists are always outsiders. They should be outsiders, right? And that, in a way, is the thing that makes us want to say the things that you can't say when you're inside, in the club or the library or the court where you got to be quiet all the time. So I go to these events, you know, the Mehfil, Shanti and John, right? And you all sit around on rugs and they play this amazing Indian music and it's like an Indian wedding, right? We all just sit around, we talk, we eat, we walk in and out, we just live our lives, right? And there will always be a very serious looking, well, much older white man or woman who will turn around at some point and go, shh. And everyone goes, yeah, sorry. Anyway, right? And what I think is really interesting is that it's like that at the opera. You know, Opera Australia is now saying, well, we want to start making opera more like it was in the 18th century and people would just walk in and out and look at each other's clothes. It was passaggiata. We'd eat and talk and hiss and boo. And there was a real organic energy rolling between an audience and a performer, which is why opera singers sing so loud in that way, to get over all the ambient noise. Now what is it? It's basically, what, 45 snoring barristers with their first or second wives who are only there because their wives want something to do apart from taking Mogadon and going to lunch? It's sterile.
Okay, what would you like the future to look like?
Well, you know what I'd like the future to look like? I'd like the future to look like it is now, in the street, in our homes, in our workplaces, on the train, in real life. You know what I'd like the future to look like? I'd like the future to look like a place where my view and my persona and my is not related to my identity, where I don't have to tell the stories of a billion people I don't know who happen to look like me, right? I remember Aziz Ansari. I haven't seen the second series of Master of None, by the way. Aziz Ansari
it's
says...
It's awesome. Just letting
I
know.
People say to me all the time, have you seen Lion and Master of None, right? So apparently he had this thing where people were saying to him, so, like he was doing something for Parks and Recreation and had all these reporters going, so, Slumdog Millionaire, eh? And he went, well, yeah, what am I meant to say? Well, it's been doing very well. I hear it's going to win some Oscars. And he said, well, how am I meant to respond that some people I don't know from a part of India I've never been who happen to look like me have made a movie that a lot of white people like? And he went, it's kind of weird. And then I thought, what must it be like? And so the reporters were going, oh, that's a bit mean-spirited. You meant to go, yeah, great. Isn't it great for Indian people and Indian actors and Indian stories and blah, 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 even though the director wasn't Indian and the screenwriter wasn't Indian and even the lead actor wasn't Indian. He couldn't even do an Indian accent. Apparently he was the only kid in that slum to grow up with an English accent, right? Anyway, Aziz Ansari goes, then it occurred to me, what must white people be like every time they watch a movie? Wow, Wall Street, that's us. How awesome is that? Jaws, that's people like us being eaten by the shark. How awesome is that?
Oh,
like every single movie made in Hollywood except for The Joy Luck Club, Slumdog Millionaire and Waiting to Exhale. How awesome is that? So the future, what's it going to be like? Hopefully it'll be a future where my voice doesn't have to be mediated by someone else's prejudices or perceptions or privileges, where my story doesn't have to be qualified by my parents' ethnicity, where I'm not just some guy who happens to be Indian. I'm just a guy looking at a girl, talking into a microphone on a podcast you're listening to now.
Thank you, Sunil Badami. You're pretty awesome.
That was Sunil Badami, writer, TV and radio host. Sunil recently gave the prestigious 2017 Colin Simpson Memorial Lecture, asking what is the Australian voice. If you go to our Facebook page, you'll find a link to his whole speech, and I really encourage you to read it. It's fantastic. Now, who would like to play a round of darts? In our regular podcast segment, Diversity Arts Australia's Sonia Mermand asks an artist or someone working in the sector quick questions and sees if their answers hit the dartboard. Today's lucky contestant is...
My name is Jennifer Wong. I'm a comedian. I live in Sydney.
Like, when was the first time that you saw yourself on stage or in the media or, you know, reflected back at you?
But I think watching a lot of American TV, you know, after school when I was little, it kind of did make you think that anyone who wasn't white was someone that you would kind of identify with because they were more like my family in terms of having their own ways of doing things that wasn't what the quote majority were doing that made you feel like, yeah, there is a similarity there. So yes, I think in the absence of seeing people who look exactly like you or sound exactly like you as a reader, most of all, I think what you do is you end up finding an emotional resemblance to the characters and that kind of thing. And so for me growing up, that's the kind of things that I would cling to heart-wise. Here's a story about a lonely child, Harriet the Spy. Here's a story of someone trying to, you know, deal with change when, you know, an adult figure leaves their life or something like that. So I think you kind of become a very good reader of emotion. And also I think, you know, the thing about being at Boundless today is seeing that all the readers and all the speakers, the writers, are so well-versed in what we think of as, well, what was referred to a lot today as white man's literature, right? So in a way, our whole lives we've been studying this syllabus while at the same time knowing that there are other ways of living, other ways of thinking, other ways of loving and being and praying and all that kind of stuff. So in actual fact, you look around and you're like, wow, all these people are doubly qualified. They are able to engage as white society would like them to, and they're also got these other lives that we've not read about, seen in film necessarily, or heard about on the radio. And yeah, I think that's the thing, when you're in an environment like this, you just see these double strengths, as opposed to in another situation in the news where you might see that this is a weakness.
While we know that Australia's arts and screen sectors have a long way to go before they reflect what Australia actually looks like, there's a lot to celebrate too. So, in this podcast, we're handing out 5-star awards to people, groups or institutions who are doing great things to promote cultural diversity in the arts and screen sectors. This week's winner is the Screen Diversity Inclusion Network, set up by AFTERS, the Australian Film and Television and Radio School. They've created a network of broadcasters and training organisations committed to a more inclusive screen industry. They have a great Facebook page that you can check out if you just Google Screen Diversity Inclusion Network. If you want to nominate someone for a 5-star award, please send us your recommendations to info@diversityarts.org.au.
I really enjoyed hearing some of the feedback we got from our last podcast, and this is one from Hannah Lai in Sydney.
Thank you, Darts and Carolina. It's great to hear about people and organisations advocating for a more inclusive art scene. I really enjoyed hearing about how art is an expression and it doesn't have to be tied to a story of survival or trauma or any refugee-like experience. And so displacement isn't something that should be exploited through art, because artists are people first before any sort of label is put on them. Your conversation also helped me dismantle the categories of traditional and cultural arts versus contemporary arts, because cultural expression really is an evolving process.
So here's some awesome feedback that I got via an email from Juliet Rogers, the CEO of the Australian Society of Authors. And she attended the Beyond Tick Boxes symposium where Sunil Badami participated in a panel. So Juliet writes, "I just wanted to let you know that the day I spent at the Diversity in the Arts Day provided a great deal of fuel for thought. And thus far, it's had 2 noteworthy outcomes. Firstly, I got to hear Sunil Badami speak, which directly led us to asking him to present the Australian Society of Authors Colin Simpson lecture this year, the theme of which was Why Aren't We Listening and Who Aren't We Listening To? It was broadcast on Big Ideas on the ABC on 6th of December 2017. And secondly, we made Brave Writing the theme of our Australian Author magazine. I know you went to such a lot of work that day, and I thought it might help to know that it bore fruit and is still doing so as we start to work hard to diversify the ASA, Australian Society of Authors, and make it more relevant across a broad membership." And thanks so much, Juliet, for your email. It really meant so much to all of us who worked on that day. I really encourage you to go and listen to Sunil Badami's speech. We're a big fan of Sunil Badami at Diversity Arts, and I've told him several times that if he ever wants to form a cult, I'll come and join it. So make sure you go and listen to his speech. That's all for this episode of the Colour Cycle podcast made by Diversity Arts Australia, an organisation that advocates for more diversity in Australia's arts and screen sectors. You can subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed it, please pass it on to your friends and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. It really does help other people to find us. We'd love to hear what you think, so leave a comment on our Facebook page or record a message on your phone and email it to us at info@diversityarts.org.au. I'd like to acknowledge Create New South Wales and the Australia Council for the Arts for supporting this podcast series, and also to thank our partners at Casula Powerhouse Arts Centre. This episode was produced by Jennifer Macy from Audiocraft. Thank you to Tarek Sawires for composing our intro and outro music, and to Tarumi Narashima and Paul Macy for additional music. I'm Lina Nahlus. Thanks for your company, and Masalemi.